Just a couple of nice guys bringing you another episode.
Coming at you.
Talk about that. Right before we recorded, Johnny was talking about nice guys.
Yeah, because that was like, I had my manager for a long time. He used to say that because I would say, oh, this guy wants me to come to this event. They're lowballing me, but he's such a nice guy. Let's make it happen. He'd be like, first of all, just stop it. I go, what? He goes, we don't say that around here. I go, what? Nice? He goes, nice guy is the most useless term.
Yeah.
And I go, I don't know what you mean. He goes, it means nothing. Because, like, whenever they arrest a serial killer, they're always like, he was such a nice guy. They right. found, like, bodies in barrels.
It's like, apparently,
heads in the freezer.
So little you didn't know that he was murdering people yeah. on the side. Yeah.
It is interesting, though, how we look at people. Because it's like, especially if you meet somebody the first time,
right.
they're on their best behavior. It's like a first date.
Yeah.
It's like an audition for a relationship, especially if you want to do business with that person.
Yeah. You want to do business with the people you date?
No. I'm mixing metaphors. What is Johnny into? No, but I mean, like, I'm talking about, like, if I was a client.
Right.
So, like, say I'm meeting with a church and I'm just emailing them. I'm trying to come off as like, hey, I'm right. just wanted, I'm in your area. If I could be available to your people and blah, blah, in this time that we're in, I know they need to laugh. But I'm trying to come off as a nice guy. But right. I mean, I'm not saying it's an act, but it is I'm being the ultra best version of myself.
Well, sure.
And they're going to do the same thing. If you meet the pastor, they're not going to be like, let me tell you the crap's going on around here. Sometimes that does happen, though. I don't know if you ever experienced that.
Yeah.
When you've, I know you've done counseling and stuff with other pastors and, yeah. and maybe you have other relationships with, like, you have pastor friends who you've written for and they confide in you.
Yeah.
Like, hey, this may look great on the surface, but holy moly, it's a crap storm in here. And I like that, though. And I think that happens more with me once I've done, like, let's say 2 or 3 events for the same church. I become the guy that's their sounding board.
Right.
Because they know I'm kind of there and I leave and I don't say anything to anybody, but I could be like, because one time I did a thing and this pastor was like, the worship guy comes in, he's like, you guys need anything? And he was real like falling over himself to bring us coffee or whatever. And then I was like, what a nice guy. And he leaves and the guy's like, yeah, that guy's getting fired. Like, I was like, whoa!
Oh, no.
I couldn't believe it. Like, he just kind of tells me out of hand, like, yeah, he's leaving next week. Like, oh man.
Yeah, I think I am the guy that overshares up front. Like,
yeah.
It feels really disingenuous to me to make things look better than they
yeah.
are. Because I find myself doing that. Because I'm a perennial people pleaser.
Right, okay.
But say that 5 times fast.
Man, that's picking a peck of pickled peppers.
My favorite one is Steve Martin. We'll come back to this. My favorite one is
I slit the sheet,
and on the slitted sheet I sit.
I've always wanted to say that.
I say it all the time, like during worship practice, like as we're warming up, you know, it's just scary.
I used to do, there was a movie called Speechless, which we've talked about.
Yeah.
Where the two rival speechwriters for the mayoral or gubernatorial campaign,
yeah.
they fall in love. But there's a character in that Christopher Reeve plays, and he's kind of like the Gulf War correspondent
yeah.
that becomes famous. And they call him Baghdad Bob.
Yeah.
And he's warming up before he goes on to do like a live feed. And he goes, 10 tiny tots yeah. on the train tracks, 10 tiny tots. And if you remember, even in the band days, yeah. I used to say
that all the time.
And it would be so funny to watch. I'm going, check one, check two. And then I say, 10 tiny tots on the train tracks. And then the people who are in the back who are just, it's a church sound guy. Their eyes get big. Like, what are we in for? Like, this guy is dark. And it's just a reference to a movie, but I guess it does sound like I'm a monster, but.
That's great. No, but I find myself, how are things? Things are great, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, I feel like I'm not, it's not that everything's bad.
But you don't want to get into everything. Oh, my colon. Like, you right. don't want to immediately pour out the.
I got this rash.
Every dark thing that's happening in your life. People, when they ask how you are, generally want you to say fine
right.
so they can move on. They're not even listening for a response.
Right.
How are you? Good, good. All right, let's get down to business.
So I was on a call with a publisher this week, and we were talking about race. And we got into the call, and they said, well, John, because I can't talk about it yet. Nothing's done yet. But
yeah.
I have a co-author, and I'm the white guy, you know. So
wait, what?
I know you're shocked. And so they were like, "So, do you think from your story that you would have anything like from your own brokenness or mistakes you've made that you could share? And I was just like, oh man, you done opened up the floodgates. I mean, because that's kind of where I live. I've just been dying for you guys. I didn't say it like that, but in my mind, I'm like,
yeah,
asking me to share my mistakes, that's really more natural for me than it is to share, because I don't have a lot of wins on those fronts. I feel like, you know, the gospel kind of calls you to keep changing and growing. But it was just funny. It was like, well, do you got about 45 minutes? I'll tell you the first one.
And it's true. I do think, having said all that about how I try to be on best behavior, if I'm trying to, like, the whole audition mindset, if you meet somebody for the first time, you're trying to be impressive. I do think that comedy, I've been doing this 12 years now, I do think it has made me way more vulnerable, because that's the kind of thing that you'll mine. The thing that you're really embarrassed about before you begin doing comedy is the thing that now becomes the thing you must share.
Right.
Because it's what you're looking for, relatability. Even now, when I'm talking about, I'm writing now, and I've lost a bunch of weight. I'm exercising every day during the pandemic. I've really like got in touch with like a fit side of myself, yeah. And I really am like, it's becoming a cool thing, and I love it. Now, the eating is not great. I'm still eating garbage, but I'm getting in good shape. But that does not make me more relatable to a crowd. It makes me less relatable. Right. It is a barrier.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to get up and be like, guys, I ran 3 miles today again. You know, right. You're not going to believe, you know, a heavy set guy. Think about Jim Gaffigan. Right. He's just fat enough to be able to be the doughy guy that makes jokes about how much bacon he eats.
Right.
But he's not so fat where you're like, his heart's going to explode on stage. He's right in the middle.
He's one of middle.
But if Jim Gaffigan got abs,
yeah,
he would lose a lot of his audience. Like, there's a thing, there's something like, so all that said, I do think that I'm more vulnerable, and I'm trying to figure out that balance between like being healthy enough to where I don't die, but being also vulnerable enough and having commonalities with my audience and being able to point those things out. It's a weird, like, tightrope you walk.
Yeah, it's very strange. And I think in the pastoral world, it's like people kind of want their pastors to be a little above reproach. That's a great term among the Christian
reproach.
World. Above reproach.
We're the only ones that say reproach.
Absolutely. Like, above reproach.
It's right up there with armor bearer. I just want to be an armor bearer for you. I want to be above reproach as your armor bearer.
Oh, dude.
Like, dude, just give me some coffee. We're firing you this month. You don't know it yet, but you're done.
You're out. I don't like, I kind of think that what makes a good pastor isn't, yes, there's this fine line here. There are things I could do that would get me fired,
mm-hmm.
you know, or that would forfeit my right to do this role. That's true of any role.
Yeah.
You know, if you're a bus driver, I have a CDL, and there are things I could do that the government would take away my CDL for.
Yeah.
You know, even if I didn't hurt anybody, but, oh, you forfeit the right to drive a commercial vehicle. So like, I'm okay with consequences and all those things. I just go though, like, giving the appearance of being above reproach is a part of what is causing everybody else to want to hide who they really are and not allow what Jesus wants to do in them to change. Mm-hmm. Like they don't want to be honest about it, because we've taught them that the great Christians are not honest about it with everybody. And so there's like that weird, but then you have a lot of Christians that come in. If you're that broken and vulnerable from the stage, and they're the visitor, they're freaked out by it because it is not their version.
Yeah, they're not used to it.
Of Christianity. So it's like this middle.
If this is what he's telling me, what's he hiding?
That's the old way of thinking, yeah.
Yeah.
And you just go, I wonder if there's some line of like, well, how do we, because, you know, I don't do, I guess I call it shallow conversation. That's literally how I refer to small talk. I don't do small talk very well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I really would prefer to talk about something significant. So it's hard to know. But I do have like that whole, hey, how you doing? I'm John. I don't have to tell you everything about my rash immediately. But, you know,
right.
I just.
But
I just,
we're going to get into the rash soon.
Right. Within 20 minutes, I try to bring it out.
Yeah. Are you guys ready to order? That kind of a thing.
Oh, that's great. That's great. So speaking of Speechless, so you referenced that movie when we were speaking of this other movie called Irresistible.
Oh, right. Did you see it?
I did see it.
What'd you think?
So it's, you know, if you guys haven't watched it, it's one of the Apple Plus shows.
Oh, it's on Apple Plus now. Yeah. Okay.
And that's who made it, I thought.
I don't know, because they released it in theaters, and that's where I saw it. I actually saw it at a local theater that was like with four other people, because there's a theater down the road from us that opened earlier.
I thought it was like Greyhound. It was like one of these Apple TV.
It is, but
movies.
I think they also did like a limited theater release.
You know what? I didn't like it to the last 20 minutes.
Okay.
Like, it was, they kind of got me. like I thought.
Oh, yeah, it's a great twist.
We're really, 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 really.
You're not going to ruin it, are you?
No, but I just felt like it was really lacking in plot and character development. And I kept waiting for this whole romantic thing to, you know, happen between the two characters. I was like, well, that's not going to happen. They've made her completely unlikable. Yeah. Like, these are, like, there's no. Mm-hmm. And then you got kind of the twist. You know, it was like, okay, you know, yeah, now yeah. It all made. So, yeah, it redeemed itself. But it almost, like, was shallow on purpose.
I liked how it, I thought it was going to be way more partisan than it was.
Yeah.
And in the end, it kind of just
made everybody
impugns the entire system.
Yeah.
The entire lobbyist
yeah.
system and fundraising. What do you call it? PACs, super PACs and all the things that,
right.
that kind of, it kind of paints them as a stain on the process.
Yeah.
You know, for both sides, which I thought was pretty fair and balanced from Jon Stewart, who is a very left, you know, right. far left person. But is clever. Gosh, what a clever writer and a brilliant comic. I mean, when you think about what him and Colbert did, I mean, every millennial, basically, a lot of their political thought came from The Daily Show and The Colbert Report.
Yeah,
it's like that. They moved the ball down the field as far as like political ideology. So this idea that comedy, it's a powerful force. If you really know how to do what you're doing,
yeah.
And it's kind of a shame that there's not a more conservative balance to that.
I mean, I watched Trevor Noah. I was on a trip the other day,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it was fascinating. I mean, I watch him sometimes. Fascinating. Because takes a lot of thought to pull comedy. Of course, you've seen the clip, by the way, of him with the Vols hat superimposed on his head.
It's going to be the Vols year.
Hearing the South African guy do the Southern accent.
That's great.
And all the Vols fans love it because so true. Like, nobody's been upset. Vol Twitter did not come after him, apparently.
No, they were like, yep, you nailed it.
Yeah, it's us.
They put a Vols hat on him. They superimposed it. Yeah.
It's so good. But I just, you know, that line of bringing some semblance of humor into a lot of scathing. I mean, I watched a whole report on Breonna Taylor that he was giving, and it was a real report.
Uh-huh. When he's doing it with no audience and just from his living room, and it's super hard.
Yeah, and you know, learning more and more about, you know, and again, trying to stick the facts. And then right after that, there was a report on, it was a COVID report, but it was a real thing, but they did it in a funny way. It was about all of this testing this company is doing of sewage treatment plants outside of, they're now testing people's poop to determine, because I guess it carries enough of the virus, they can tell you whether or not the virus is going up or down in the population without all the same testing. So they're now, looking at it at a totally different thing. It's like whether that's ethical.
Dude, that's scriptural, dude. It's what comes out of a man that defiles him.
That's what it says. It's right there in red and white. You know, and it was just like, but of course, the correspondent,
mm-hmm.
couldn't help himself. I mean, he's interviewing this real scientist, and like the number of, he's like, I promise you, I will only do three poop jokes. And every time he would do one, it's like, ding, you know, he ended up doing like five. He's like, great. I'm sorry. But it was like, what a fascinating way to get a real story from a real company.
Mm-hmm.
And they're making fun of it as they go, but you still walked away with some knowledge. Like, I just thought that was very.
It's good. I mean, and again, and those shows, I mean, I say that they influence political thought. I'm not saying good for good or bad. I think it's sad that there's not more balance. I think part of it is because we've talked about this before. You and I are both consider ourselves moderate to conservative.
Yeah.
I would say conservative comedy, if you're just going to say like, I'm a conservative comic, I'm a Tea Party comic. Like there are those guys out there. And it's so hard because
it's not funny.
Comedy, comedy's about punching up.
Right.
So if you're going to be like, these welfare people out here living off the government dole, like you're punching down just to start the joke.
You're going to be a brilliant comedian, but your joke's not funny if you're punching down.
Yeah. Right. And so, and plus, I don't like, I say I don't like comedy with an agenda, having said that I feel like Jon Stewart's brilliant. I do think that there's a way, like, I do think comedy with an agenda can work, but it's got to be so funny.
Yeah.
Like, if you go into my show, my show is not political at all. So anybody that listens to this show and is like, I'm not bringing Johnny in if he's going to talk like that. Like, my show, you've seen it. It's not political at all.
No.
It's very silly. It's very fun. It's very relatable.
You wear the American flag shorts, just like Apollo Creed.
Then at the
end,
I light them on fire. They go up like flash paper. People love it. I'm just there naked. It's very edgy. No, but my show's not political at all. But I just think it's interesting. One of the reasons it's not is because I hate being divisive Right. I think comedy is like people go to escape that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But when I do see, every now and again, I'll see somebody do a set and they'll have a couple of political jokes. And I'll be really like, wow, that was, man, they nailed it.
Yeah.
But the joke has to be so good.
It has to be perfect, yeah.
Like, I feel like when people try to be, like, I used to say, I was talking to Dustin Nickerson, my friend who's a comic in California, and we were talking about that, and I said, I hate important comedy. Like, I think comedy is important. Like, right. I'll talk about how it can influence thought. It can speak truth to power. It can make people, like, be free from concern for an hour.
Sure.
Even if it only does that, it's amazing.
Yeah.
It's a gift just if it does that. But can it speak truth to power? Can it point out injustice? Can it do all those things? Yes. But I hate when comedy, when I can see comedy trying to be important. It's almost like when you're at the U2 concert, who is one of my favorite bands, if not my favorite band of all time. But when you can see Bono, the tumbler's turning and he's figuring out when he's going to stop between songs and preach to you
yeah.
about apartheid or whatever he decided. And you're just like, okay. And then you can see people like running to the porta potties at that point. Like that's when it gets a little bit tiresome. I think there's a time and a place, but if you're going to do it, man, it's got to be so good. And I just have never felt like I had a couple political jokes early on when I was writing in my career. And I told them a couple of times. One of them was about Obama getting, it was about participation awards and how we give kids trophies for whatever. And Obama had just won the Nobel Prize.
Yeah.
Like 6 weeks into office or something. And so I said, we're giving these kids trophies for nothing. What are we teaching them? And I put a slide up of Obama with the medal around his neck. It got this big laugh. I did it in our church. And then I did it one more time and it got like half laugh, half groan. And I never did it again. I was like, this is not why I do comedy. Like, right. It's not worth it to me
right.
to be like, this is the hill I will die on.
Yeah.
And so I just decided from then, I'm like, I'm going to talk about cotton balls and Q-tips and marriage and, you know, family and whatever. And I can live with that. I can live with my act if I do that. But I do think that there are some brilliant political commentators out there and brilliant political comics. But it feels like the standard for me when I see somebody, they go, well, here's what my show is. It's about this and this. And I want this through line to be through the entire show that conservative thought is the way to. It's like, I'm going to see that. It's almost like when you're watching an evangelist and he's telling the funny story about how, I remember we were watching somebody who's a friend of ours at the time. He was telling a story about riding his bike home as a kid. And he goes, but there were shortcuts. He goes, I had to go a certain way. There were shortcuts, but I never took the short. And he was, you could tell he was setting up for the big turn. or if you see a pastor and he's just like, now I want you to go out there and be funny, Johnny. But then in the end, I want you to make the turn so we can get their email address. Like, you just know, I want you to bait the hook, but then we got to bring them home. Like, I'm so cynical. I feel like an audience can see that coming.
Yeah.
So I feel like you've got to be so good if you're going to also be like, and this is my conservative politics on top of it. So I just have never felt like I had that standard met.
Well, I think your act and your delivery are far from vapid. Like, I don't think you're...
Yeah, I don't think it's the same thing as saying, like, my act is not deep. But it's just, it's about different things. And hopefully it's about uniting.
Yeah.
Like, hey, we're all laughing. That's one thing about laughter. It's cool. It's like a big amen. It's like a big, you look around. I like the lights to be low because I want people to feel laughter around them. And they feel like they're not alone.
Yeah.
Well, there's like, if you ever laughed at something and you realize you're the only one laughing, yeah. It's like the weirdest feeling in the world. So if you get everybody laughing, it's one of the reasons you want people packed tightly together, which is now Corona's.
It's the reason I push pause, by the way, when Laura is looking at her phone instead of what we're watching on Netflix.
Yeah.
I want the shared experience.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, I think there's that line. I do think politics in particular is probably, to me, there are other topics I have heard you address. I mean, you'll talk about marriage and you'll be very vulnerable. You won't tell details you don't want everybody to know. But you're also not acting like it's all perfect.
Right, right. And I'm trying to teach a little bit. Yeah, the flaws are part of what makes things beautiful.
Right.
I think if there's a through line in my show now, it is that nobody is cool and it's okay.
Yeah.
Like, in other words, let's chip away at pretense.
Yeah.
So I'll tell the story about, because part of it is I get up there and I'm kind of controlling an audience. I'm doing well or I'm getting laughs. And the theory is like, how's he doing this? Or what people have this respect for. So I want to show them immediately, look, I'm a total screw up.
Yeah.
And we all are. And it's okay. So I tell a million stories about my own childhood growing up, being the kid that was picked on, being the chubby kid in gym class, etc. And those are all pieces in my show that are, it's like a tool. And it's to let them let their guard down. It's not about like, just getting laughs and getting a check and leaving. It's about like we all, I want you to feel better about your own experience in gym class.
Yeah.
And not feel like, oh, I thought that only happened to me.
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of it. That's what it should be. Whereas when you just say, isn't Obama an idiot or isn't, you know, Trump an idiot? Like you immediately are cutting the room at least in half.
Yeah.
Maybe worse, depending on where you're at, you know. I just feel like it's not worth it unless you really had a I mean, it would have to be the zinger of all zingers before I would just whip out the Trump joke.
It's that weird line of you know, again, you said, you know, when Bono was talking about apartheid, that's important, and he's honored for that. Is that I don't know. I struggle with this. You know, I remember I wrote a book called Just Keep Breathing. Remember that book?
Uh-huh.
With Reggie. And we took all these letters and stuff and changed names and locations, and we just can't get to responding to the thousands of people who reach out to him. So we decided to write a book that would be more public, using a lot of their stories,
yeah,
with their permission, you know, and answering them in the book. And so, but we did not share faith,
yeah,
because we wanted it to be a resource that could go to teachers because he's in school so much,
right? And there's so many rules against, yeah, that, yeah.
And so I remember having like this. Really, I know this sounds weird because I, again, Avid Endorsement had nothing about faith in it. I mean, I think I talked about Martin Luther, mm-hmm, nailing something to a door because doors are the threshold between the, yeah, outdoors and the indoors. But it was like a real non,
yeah,
there,
yeah,
was no turn.
Right.
It was just silly, you know.
Yeah, it's a common reference everybody would know. The right. Night, yeah.
And so this, I remember I was in Vegas with Laura on a business trip, and she was working all day and I was writing all day, and I was really struggling because I was like, I'm not saying the most important thing to me, mm-hmm, in this book. And I really felt like this sense of kind of, I don't know, gosh, it's so hard. I felt like, Johnny, that I heard from the Holy Spirit inside of me. Can, mm-hmm, I say that without everybody freaking out? Like, you know, I'm not
saying... We're not going to know if people freak out about that.
Sorry.
This is not a live stream, John.
I read God's word and feel like that some of it jumps off the page to me. At times, yeah, I'm reminded of, sure, something I read, or a friend of one of God's people will say something to me and I feel like it's something I need to pay attention to because God, and I do feel like there's a whisper. And all three of those balanced... Mm-hmm. Are the way we should hear from God. If you only just pick up Ezekiel and open it and go and do likewise, you're going to do some really weird stuff.
Ezekiel was messed up. I mean, is that what you're saying?
I'm saying he laid on his side for a year.
Yeah.
Eating off food that was cooked over a fire of poop because he was trying to prove a point of how bad it was going to be in the exile. Don't, okay, go thou and do likewise. Like, that's, right, not what God has for you. So, yes, sometimes we apply God's word prescriptively, and sometimes it's just descriptively. And then, yes, there is a whisper, but you and I came out of movements where people only went by the whisper.
Yeah.
So it's like, thus saith the Lord, and they say stuff that you know the Lord didn't say.
Yeah.
And the Bible says it's okay that people make mistakes doing that. You're supposed to correct it. You know, this is what we have in community and in God's word. So there's not a balance there, but then it's like, how dare you speak against the, well, Jesus, right, or excuse me, Paul, through Jesus's inspiration, told us to. That's why. And the third thing is, with God's people, you live and you, yeah, like, yeah, from Proverbs get wisdom. So sorry, it's got to precursor all that I felt like this is a moment of whisper that lines up with God's people and God's word, that I just felt like the Lord said to me every time that there's breath, because the name of the book was Just Keep Breathing, mm-hmm, every time that there's breath, I'm in it.
Yeah.
And it really impacted me. Like, you don't always got to make the turn, you know, like, it's okay if, yeah, are you helping a kid not commit suicide? That was the main purpose of that book, was that you would hang on, mm-hmm, because tomorrow may be different, and those who feel like they can't hang on another day.
Yeah.
Like, I don't get to in this format necessarily share with you the gospel, though it is my primary goal and what has changed me. But what I might do is encourage you enough to keep breathing another few days, and maybe so that the gospel can be presented in your future.
Yeah.
It was kind of like this really interesting, like, moment of, I guess, understanding common grace a little more. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, you know, I don't hold a corner market here with this message. You know, God's doing a lot of things in a lot of people outside of what I'm saying or what we're saying in a church. And if we were open to that,
yeah,
then we don't have to water down or skip, but we may be able to more, I guess, aptly address the right context that we're in. Okay, I know where I am. It's like Paul in Athens. Literally, if you think of it like this, it's so super offensive to the modern Christian mind. And that is that Paul preached a sermon among a bunch of idols, and he never mentioned Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
He literally didn't say his name.
Yeah, he just said, you're serving this one God, the unknown God. And I'm telling you, I know who that is. And he told his story and said, this is who that guy's to, right?
Yeah. And he said, and they all listened. And I actually read in a history book that it wasn't just him standing. It was actually, he could have lost his life in the current, I guess, legal environment of that day, because to deny multiple gods was like a criminal offense.
Huh.
So he wasn't just standing with the philosophers. Like, again, think about Socrates, because of his belief system, was made to drink hemlock and died. So, like, your belief systems really mattered in a polytheistic pagan culture where this isn't like just some hobby for them. Like, we really believe that these gods are this and that. If you speak out against them, then you could be, you know, executed. So Paul is making some pretty bold statements and putting himself on the line. And he did eventually talk about Jesus, but in the beginning, he drew them from where he was. He had like this understanding. So I'm not opposed to talking about Jesus. I mean, you could clip that out, but I think what I'm saying is right then, the best thing to do was to reach them where they were. And then when he talked about the resurrection, they all laughed at him anyway, because that's ridiculous, like you talked about last episode, to Platonic thinking, which is that the body is a prison that should be discarded, and that's how you reach enlightenment, is become free from physical things. Therefore, the idea of resurrecting a physical body was asinine to the Greeks in Athens in the first century when Paul's speaking to them. So he does, though, come to the side, and a few people are interested in what he says, and then he shares the full gospel with those few people to the side who are open-minded to what it was he had to give.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's like this idea that it's okay for us to be, that's what Paul said, all things to all men, wasn't a watering down, it was wisdom. And it takes into account timing, and it takes into account context, it takes into account the paradigm of the people around you, it takes into account, like, if you just got to stand up. I remember I told Reggie this story. He was in this week, and I brought him in 2009, when we were all working here in youth ministry. You were too. Did you go with me to Mount Jewett High School when he did that rally at Mount Jewett High School?
Yes.
Okay. So it wasn't a rally. Sorry, it was an in-school rally.
Yeah, assembly thing.
And the principal at the time, Mr. Brown of Mount Jewett High School, like, we had such, Reggie is the number one public school speaker in the world, does 6 to 8 assemblies a day. Like, the guy's got it down. And he was terrified to bring him in.
Sure.
And as it comes to find out, the reason was, a year or two before, a guy came in who was a Christian who had said he would do what Reggie was going to do and just kind of talk about good life choices, and you can invite them to a rally outside.
Anti-drug, anti-bullying, anti-whatever.
And instead, the guy got in there and couldn't help himself.
Yeah.
And just straight up shared the gospel and did an altar call.
Oh, boy.
In a public school gymnasium.
Yeah, you can't do that.
Because, and look, we can argue the merits of whether, or the demerits of whether or not there should be prayer.
Well, if you're going to argue in favor of that, you got to argue in favor of equal time for all religions. That's the hard part.
Well, only if you abide by the Constitution, but I understand.
Do you want to go to the Satanist school assembly?
But if we think of the Constitution as somehow married to Christianity, because it does mention God and all those things in it, but if we don't understand that the founding fathers had a separation of...
Well, there's... Your
rhetoric
freedom,
and their belief.
Freedom from religion, right. If you choose that.
You do have that freedom.
Right,
yeah.
You have that freedom.
And so I remember, I'll never forget standing there as those kids piled into that gym, and it was four-sided. So kids were all around us, okay? Well, most rooms are four-sided, Johnny.
Well, it was a four-sided room? Get out of here.
I mean, the bleachers were on all four sides. Because normally you stand in face, but he was going to be center stage, which you know how hard that is.
Yeah.
People are behind you.
Oh, right.
The side. And so I was like, oh, man. And it's 2,000, or actually 2,500 kids, probably huge high school. And Mr. Brown, who was probably 5 years from retirement, stood next to me, and he turns to me and he says, I just want you to know that if I go down, you're going down with me. I kid you not, he said that. And I
was he serious?
Yes, he was serious.
Oh my gosh.
He was not. Mr. Brown was a funny guy, but he wasn't like,
I will end you.
He wasn't a jokester. Like, he was letting me know that he was putting himself out there again because somebody couldn't handle it.
Yeah.
And I was like, listen, Mr. Brown, Reggie is a professional. And that sounds weird to say, but he knows what he knows where his line is in the school, you know. And of course, Reggie had them all.
Huh.
And you remember that. I've never seen a guy that has a whole
it's 10 unbelievable.
Seconds, you know,
it's
laughing, crying, the whole, and it is God. It's absolutely God-given, God-breathed, God's working in it.
Well, it's him. He's living out his complete purpose. It's watching a human being walking in their purpose.
It's unbelievable.
It's crazy.
And he doesn't even, like, that's the thing about Reggie is he doesn't, the way you said that, he doesn't strive to do it.
No.
He doesn't. You said something the other day. I don't know if it was on the podcast or at lunch, but it's deeply impacted me. You said, somebody said, you were quoting them, there are a lot, if you have to kick a door down,
right,
there's a good chance it wasn't the right door.
Yeah.
You know, and that's so like contra.
Yeah, if you have to kick the door down, it's not your door.
Yeah. That's so contra to like the thought of pulling yourself up with your bootstraps and working hard and paying your dues. And there's all that in American culture that I agree with. And I probably
right. Go
struggle.
Kill it, drag it home.
Yeah. I probably struggle from overworking. You know, like that's, I find security and try to control the outcomes through doing my part. But when you do see a guy like Reggie, he won't kick a door down. He doesn't have any need to. He just literally lets things come. And things come to him. By the way, he's going to be the MC for they're bringing back the Big Promise Keepers.
Yeah.
It's already got like 40-something thousand people registered at Dallas Stadium at Jerry World.
Wow.
And he's going to be a speaker in the MC just like the old days. Like, you just go, and he doesn't care. That's the thing. He just assumed being in middle school, he really, really would. There's no. And
this is for next year.
This is for next year. Yeah, yeah.
Hopefully things will be better.
Right. Otherwise, well, it's
it'll
by
be
the summer. They're
I can see the headline now. Virus Keepers. It's just the headlines write themselves. Promise COVID.
Oh, that's great. That's great. But I don't know. I see that and I go, wow.
Yeah.
You said to be free from pretense is, I think, the
well, and you're
goal.
Hoping you can help your audience be free from it.
Yeah.
When they see you. You know, his whole thing is self-deprecation too. I mean, he's using a lot of the principles of comedy in his talks. He has a lot of jokes and he's a heavier guy. So a lot of his vulnerabilities were on the outside right there.
Yeah.
And he doesn't hide from it. He's a big guy. He talks about being a chubby kid growing up and just not being able to ride the rides at the whatever. He immediately draws you in. And, that's a huge principle of comedy. I saw it in an interview with Jim Carrey, who obviously has been through this crazy wild ups and downs and mental illness and over the last few years. And he's written a book now and he was promoting it. And he was talking about when it kind of clicked for him was that he realized what he wanted to do with comedy, because he became a stand up sensation before In Living Color and all those movies. He said, I was with an audience and he said, I had this desire, overwhelming desire, that I wanted to be someone who was completely free of concern. So that's where he got the, how you doing tonight? All righty then. Like, not even wait for them to answer, just immediately. I don't care how you're doing. I'm fine. Mm-hmm. He goes, if I could purvey that to them, then I might be able to free them from concern.
Wow.
And so that became his whole goal. It's almost like this human, it's like, it makes it sound like he's trying to be important, but it's like, that should be the goal. Like, you remove pretense, and then they feel they can take their proverbial masks off.
Yeah.
Although not physical masks now, because we don't do that around here anymore. Keep them on, people.
I wonder how many evangelical sermons have changed since
that's right.
came out. Like, some of y'all have been...
That's right.
Every one of our sermons, every one of our fake sermons always start with some of y'all.
Yeah.
some of y'all here.
Let me tell you what my Bible says, my favorite. They used to say that. My Bible says, what? Did these guys have a different Bible?
I did see
that. Is he writing it in there?
I have seen now in multiple places, by the way, people using the whole... We come before God with unveiled face.
Oh, yeah.
They're literally using that. Like,
we behold with unveiled faces.
Talk about a horrific, like, complete disregard of biblical context. Yeah. Like, I mean, I don't know.
That'd be a great title of a book. Like, a book about bad exegesis, just terrible twisting of scriptures, and you call it Hermeneutered. Hermeneutered, what's wrong with preaching today?
I'm in,
by
man.
John Driver.
Hey, by Johnny W. with John Driver.
Oh, man.
Come
so
on
we're
now.
Split this 50-50? Sell them out of my trunk at the flea market?
Listen, I will write that proposal tomorrow.
All right, let's go.
You just need to come for the jokes.
Or wait, Hermeneutrics.
By L.
John
Johnny
W. Wait.
Oh, my goodness, that's funny.
I remember that I wanted to write a book of Scientology nursery rhymes by L. Mother Hubbard, but that was a different thing. That's stupid. I apologize to our listeners. You deserve better, and I promise you will get better.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny.
But, there's that thing of... But again, sometimes people are so trying not to be pretentious that that's a whole other level of pretense, and I don't mean that. And even when I said what I said about Bono, I love that U2's music is important, but I think sometimes like they'll write a song about apartheid.
Yeah.
And then he'll feel like like they're there to hear that song because that song, it's like there used to be an old quote that I loved. I think it was Thomas Paine that said, if you have to tell someone the truth, make them laugh. Otherwise, they'll kill you. And that's really comedy. Like yeah. you're trying to put truth in what you're saying, even if it's just a shared experience or the fact that, hey, we all need to relax a little bit or whatever you're saying in the joke or, yeah. you know, marriage isn't perfect and here's proof. Here's my marriage. Whatever you're saying, like it's got this grain of truth or at least true to you in your experience. But it's got to be funny in this idea that like you would write a song, you make it the best you can be, you spend hundreds of thousands of dollars producing it. And then you get to the arena and you go, but I think what they really want is for me to preach for about 10 minutes. Like, play the song.
I know, but the
flip... There's a time and a place, and Bono's better at it than most.
But the flip side, again, I have to defend the...
How dare you defend Bono?
Those of us out here who are a little more prose-based and preachy.
Okay, sure.
Is that lots of people will literally listen to the song and never one time think of its deeper meaning. And certainly, even if they did,
yeah.
take no action because of it. Because music is an escape,
right?
It is an entertainment.
I do. It's a balance. It's
so
a balance.
There's that weird line.
That part of Bono never really bothered me. I'm just saying, like, I know that's a knock on the band it's that like, they got really political and preachy.
It's like that. It's like that. That Creedence song that they used to play on the Levi's commercial.
Yeah, yeah.
And for 4th of July, all these American flags. Some folks are waiting
for.
Oh
flags. Yeah, it's Fortunate
Ooh,
Son.
They're red, white, and blue,
yeah,
and they use that.
It's anti-war.
It's anti-war, and they're using it yeah, for yeah. a 4th of July commercial with all of these patriotic things. And you're like, okay,
right.
okay surely Creedence would not
no,
approve.
They, we don't know. They well, no, they signed off on it, and they probably are laughing all the way to the bank. But it's like. Bruce Springsteen, Born in the USA, is the best example. Like Reagan and then Bush in '88 also used it for their campaigns.
Yeah.
It's about, like, they sent me over to kill the yellow man. It's about, like, the flag being used to, you know, co-opt murder.
Yeah.
Basically. So it's about the danger of jingoism and nationalism.
And they
and
made it into
they
a
They made it into a nationalist
yeah.
anthem. And so then he had to do cease and desist, and no campaigns really used it since. I mean, basically it was like, have you not listened to the record? Like, again, what you're saying is like, sometimes you just, they listen to the chorus. Yeah, Born in the USA. They chant,
right.
and they put their fists in the air. It's like, wait a minute. This is not pro, or it's not anti-USA, but it's an anti-war anthem, basically.
So I was writing about systemic issues this week, and that made me think, like, was for example, I was looking into... Like there's like 100 studies that mm-hmm. have been done in California. There was a Department of Justice did one, like 95 million traffic stops. Cincinnati did one. Atlanta did one. Like I'm talking hundreds of studies mm-hmm. that say that black men are pulled over and cars are searched. Something like 2.5 is the general consensus times more than white people.
Wow.
And the numbers go down at night. There's less disparity between the two numbers at night,
huh.
which they attribute to the fact is because they can't see what race they are.
Huh.
Is what is so? This is the thing, and I was writing on this, and here's the deal. I don't mind making this disclaimer because it's great. I have plenty of amazing, honorable police friends.
Yeah,
and honor what they do because like this whole whether it's a bad apple. Or a system. And no one, you know, there's a fear among some far right conservatives to acknowledge issues in a system. And I came to this conclusion. I said, look, if it is only individuals, then it's a much more alarming conclusion. Because if I can find 100 studies that say this is happening mm-hmm. all over the country,
that's a lot of bad apples.
Then you're telling me that basically. The police forces are full of corrupt people.
Yeah.
And I don't believe that.
Right.
I really don't. I think it's more likely that you have some corrupt people and then you have some others who are a part of a system that's, you know, more than 150 years old and that there's some things about it. I'm not a defund the police and get rid of it all kind of guy. I do think that much like our own church or whatever, we have to always be looking at what are we accomplishing regardless of our intent.
Mm-hmm.
That's the other big thing. Is people think, well, I can't have, whether it's sexism or racism or anything, I can't have that because I don't intend to.
Mm-hmm.
I don't intend harm. And I was like, I'm writing about this week. I can't tell you how many times my wife has come to me and that I have harmed her with something I did not intend to say, you know? And then often since I'm so litigious and legalistic in my mind and agreement-based and technical and justice-centered and think I'm right, I'll spend another 20 minutes now fighting over whether or not what I said had that. And in the end, if I love her, I just go, whether I meant to or not, I can say I'm sorry and I can own my part of that. Like, it doesn't acknowledge that I'm not acknowledging that you don't also have issues and other things within this. I'm just saying if I hurt you, and especially usually if I get to the bottom of it, she's right. There was something that was actually hurtful that came out of no malintent. And so intent, the gospel of good intent is where we kind of live. Like, well, I don't intend to do this. It's kind of like somebody coming on the property here at church and getting stung by a wasp or getting stung by a bee. And the last thing I'm going to, you know, I wouldn't walk up and say, we had a visitor get stung by a bee. I'm not going to go, well, how dare you come tell me I didn't do it. We don't condone bee stings here. I didn't release.
We're anti-bee.
I didn't release bees on you. And I don't know why you're asking me.
That'd be a heck of a church, wouldn't it? Welcome to our church. Release the bees! Just, man.
It was just like, I would say.
One person gets like a comment card. The next person gets bees.
Inside a little plastic bag. They're careful. They're getting mad now. But what I would say is I'm really sorry, ma'am, that that happened, especially if it happened to a kid or something. And then I go kill the bees.
Yeah.
You know, I take responsibility for, and I think any member would. This is not like being one of the pastors. Any member would be like, oh, man, I hate that that happened to people because we care about the visitor. So, like, at some point in time, I think that there's this place in life to say, hey, there are bigger things happening that are bigger than just individuals. Mm-hmm. And individuals doing things wrong certainly affects it. And individuals doing things right is great.
Yeah.
But we can acknowledge that there's such a thing as something in the system that was there before I got there. I've been a part of it I was a part of a systemic church issue of works-based theology.
Yeah.
Like, I just was, you know? I was probably one of the better guys in it, but I still was a part of that. And so it's okay. I think the whole point of this diatribe, Johnny, is to say, if we can't look at something and go, whether it's my act or your act, I don't have an act, by the way, Johnny, I'm a preacher.
Holy moly.
Woo. But whether it's how the way I'm preaching or whether it's the way that I'm writing or whether it's the way that I'm interacting or not interacting with issues of race or whether it's the way that I'm interacting politically, if I don't have some paradigm in which I am open to the idea that perhaps all of my ways are not completely above reproach. We call that a callback, by the way.
Boom.
Full circle. Then I'm in trouble because, like, there's no such thing of any system outside of the kingdom of God that's above reproach. And even the kingdom of God as we live it now is full of correction. Yeah. It's like the above reproach part is the heart towards Christ to take correction and be transformed. It's not the behavior that never makes a mistake. So anyway, sorry, I'm a little on that right now.
You are so on a soapbox. I had to head out. Just got back. I had a sandwich.
Sorry, you just see where I made the turn? Like it was.
I did. Listen, you can have my email address at this point.
Just so you know, when I make a turn, it's just very natural. This is how I talk to you at lunch. Like it's no different. I hope you would tell the people.
No, I do. I know. Like, I'm just teasing. Yeah, so. This is the kind of conversations we always have.
They really
just go in and out of the silliest things and the most melancholy, deep things and everything in between.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's beautiful, John.
It's like, pull my finger. And hey, how about this crisis in the Middle East?
What are fingers anyway? You know, what is a finger?
Oh, my goodness. I wonder why the expression pull my finger is so different than the expression pull my leg. Because it seems as if the other...
Yeah.
Pulling a leg would be closer anatomically to the result of pulling a finger.
Pull my finger, that happens. Pull my leg, holy moly.
Right.
Look out. Can test that for COVID.
In case in point, guys, that we zoom in and out of these things as if the English language were our playland, Johnny.
We don't know.
Just enjoy it. We hope that you've enjoyed it today and listening along. Appreciate the comments. Man, great episode. Last episode, a lot of downloads, we're sharing some clips probably through next week of last week's episode.
Yeah.
So that'll be exciting. And so if you see those little shareable things.
Yeah. Click on those and share them and retweet them because that helps other people find this that would not have otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah. And then they can go back to all, this is 126, by the way, John.
Man.
So they can go all the way back in the catalog, the annals of talk about that and discover so much. And appreciate you listening. Do send us any more comments and questions that you may have that you want us to read on the air or answer on the air. You can follow us on our various socials. You can go to our Patreon account if you'd like to be a patron and support. We have prizes. Is that what you call them?
We need to send out the Scarlet Thread Dropbox link. We forgot to do that, didn't we?
Yeah.
We said we would.
Well, we mailed everything else.
Yeah, I know.
But now you're just making up stuff for me to do. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, it's easy. That's an email, John.
Yeah.
Do your job.
We can do that.
All right.
We'll send that out this week, the Scarlet Thread. So, hey, we're going to send that out. I'm making an alarm on my calendar right now. We're going to send that out on Thursday.
Okay.
So that means if you'd like to join Patreon at any level, we'll send you that.
Any level, you can get the old, our 2004 worship project.
Called Simple Soul.
Yeah. So you can hear what John and my, our Christian rock project was.
I'm still proud of it.
I'm very proud of it.
Very proud of it.
It's a snapshot in time.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. You think we'll always be proud of it? Or do you think there'll be a time where, like, woof?
I think by now it would have. Look, I am not proud of the two records before that.
No.
So.
No.
Not at all. I wish we'd have had a real producer. Like, that would have made a difference, I think. And then they would have said, hey.
Those are all other stories that we need to tell. You don't like me when I tell those stories.
Because you call them by name.
I do. They deserve. They should have behaved better. That's what Anne Lamott said about her writing. She said, if people want me to not talk about them in my books, they should have behaved better.
Yeah. It is, yeah.
That's very vengeful, I guess, too. But it's all, you know, if you're going to tell your truth, you got to, whatever, man.
I don't know, man. That's
names have not been changed to protect the innocent or the guilty.
Well, but hey, we appreciate you being guilty of listening to talk about that today.
Too far?
Segue.
I can never tell.
Okay.
Seriously, though, we love you guys. Appreciate you listening. We'll see you next week on
Talk About That.
Want to learn more about God and His will for your life one verse at a time? I'm Quenice Petway, co-host of the Your Daily Bible Verse podcast. I'm inviting you to tune in and subscribe at lifeaudio.com.